fees no one ate. $6,100 on wines and liquors and cigars around the office. $6,100 on fruitcakes from the firemen and the rescue squad and calendars from the police association. $6,100 on Luther for a cashmere sweater he secretly loathed and a sports jacket he'd worn twice and an ostrich skin wallet that was quite expensive and quite ugly and frankly he didn't like the feel of. On Nora for a dress she wore to the company's Christmas dinner and her own cashmere sweater, which had not been seen since she unwrapped it, and a designer scarf she loved. $6,100. On Blair, $6,100 for an overcoat, gloves, and boots, and a Walkman for her jogging, and of course the latest, slimmest cell phone on the market. $6,100 on lesser gifts for a select handful of distant relatives, most on Nora's side. $6,100 on Christmas cards from a stationer three doors down from Chips in the district, where all prices were double. $6,100 for the party, an annual Christmas Eve bash at the Crank home. And what was left of it? Perhaps a useful item or two, but nothing much. $6,100. With great relish, Luther tallied the damage, as if it had been inflicted by someone else. All evidence was coming neatly together and making a very strong case. He waffled a bit at the end, where he'd saved the charity numbers. Gifts to the church, to the toy drive, to the homeless shelter, and the food bank. But he raced through the benevolence and came right back to the awful conclusion. $6,100 for Christmas. 9% of my adjusted gross, he said in disbelief. $6,100 cash. All but $600 non-deductible. In his distress, he did something he rarely did. Luther reached for the bottle of cognac in his desk drawer and knocked back a few drinks. He slept from 3 to 6 and roared to life during a shower. Nora wanted to fret over coffee and oatmeal, but Luther would have none of it. He read the paper, laughed at the comics, assured her twice that Blair was having a ball, then kissed her and raced away to the office, a man on a mission. The travel agency was in the atrium of Luther's building. He walked by it at least twice each day, seldom glancing at the window displays of beaches and mountains and sailboats and pyramids. It was there for those lucky enough to travel. Luther had never stepped inside, never thought about it, actually. Their vacation was 5 days at the beach in a friend's condo, and with his workload, they were lucky to get that. He stole away just after 10. He used the stairs so he wouldn't have to explain anything, and darted through the door of Regency Travel. Biff was waiting for him. Biff had a large flower in her hair and a waxy bronze tan, and she looked as if she'd just dropped by the shop for a few hours between beaches. Her comely smile stopped Luther cold, and her first words left him flabbergasted. "You need a cruise," she said. "How do you know?" he managed to mumble. Her hand was out, grabbing his, shaking it, leading him to her long desk, where she placed him on one side while she perched herself on the other. Long bronze legs, Luther noted. Beach legs. "December is the best time of year for a cruise," she began, and Luther was already sold. The brochures came in a torrent. She unfolded them across her desk under his dreamy eyes. "You work in the building?" she asked, easing near the issue of money. "Wiley and Beck, 6th floor, Luther said without removing his eyes from the floating palaces, the endless beaches. "Bail bondsman?" she said. Luther flinched just a bit. "No, tax accountant." "Sorry," she said, kicking herself. The pale skin, the dark eye circles, the standard blue Oxford cloth button-down with bad imitation prep school tie. She should have known better. Oh, well. She reached for even glossier brochures. "Don't believe we get too many from your firm." "We don't do vacations very well. Lots of work. I like this one right here." "Great choice." They settled on the Island Princess, a spanking new mammoth vessel with rooms for 3,000, 4 pools, 3 casinos, non-stop food, 8 stops in the Caribbean, and the list went on and on. Luther left with a stack of brochures and scurried back to his office 6 floors up. The ambush was carefully planned. First, he worked late, which was certainly not unusual, but at any rate helped set the stage for the evening. He got lucky with the weather because it was still dreary. hard to get in the spirit of the season when the skies were damp and gray, and much easier to dream about 10 luxurious days in the sun. If Nora wasn't worrying about Blair, then he'd certainly get her started. He'd simply mention some dreadful piece of news about a new virus, or perhaps a Colombian village massacre, and that would set her off. Keep her mind off the joys of Christmas. Won't be the same without Blair, will it? Why don't we take a break this year? Go hide, go escape, indulge ourselves. Sure enough, Nora was off in the jungle. She hugged him and smiled and tried to hide the fact that she'd been crying. Her day had gone reasonably well. She'd survived the ladies' luncheon and spent 2 hours at the children's clinic, part of her grinding volunteer schedule. While she heated up the pasta, he sneaked a reggae CD into the stereo, but didn't push play. Timing was crucial. They chatted about Blair, and not long into the dinner, Nora kicked the door open. "It'll be so different this Christmas, won't it, Luther?" "Yes, it will," he said sadly, swallowing hard. "Nothing'll be the same. For the first time in 23 years, she won't be here. It might even be depressing. Lots of depression at Christmas, you know." Luther quickly swallowed, and his fork grew still. "I'd love to just forget about it," she said, her words ebbing at the end. Luther flinched and cocked his good ear in her direction. "What is it?" she asked. "Well," he said dramatically, shoving his plate forward, "now that you mention it, there's something I want to discuss with you." "Finish your pasta." "I'm finished," he announced, jumping to his feet. His briefcase was just a few steps away, and he attacked it. "Luther, what are you doing?" "Hang on." He stood across the table from her, papers in both hands. "Here's my idea," he said proudly, "and it's brilliant." "Why am I nervous?" He unfolded a spreadsheet and began pointing. "Here, my dear, is what we did last Christmas. $6,100 we spent on Christmas. $6,100. I heard you the first time, and precious little to show for it. The vast majority of it down the drain, wasted. And that, of course, does not include my time, your time, the traffic, stress, worry, bickering, ill will, sleep loss, all the wonderful things that we pour into the holiday season. Where is this going?" "Thanks for asking." Luther dropped the spreadsheets and, quick as a magician, presented the Island Princess to his wife. Brochures covered the table. "Where is this going, my dear? It's going to the Caribbean. 10 days of total luxury on the Island Princess, the fanciest cruise ship in the world. The Bahamas, Jamaica, Grand Cayman. Oops, wait a minute." Luther dashed into the den, hit the play button, waited for the first notes, adjusted the volume, then dashed back to the kitchen where Nora was inspecting a brochure. "What's that?" she asked. "Reggae, the stuff they listen to down there. Anyway, where was I?" "You were island hopping." "Right. We'll snorkel on Grand Cayman, windsurf in Jamaica, lie on the beaches 10 days, Nora, 10 fabulous days. I'll have to lose some weight." "We'll both go on a diet. What do you say?"
"What's the catch?"
"The catch is simple. We don't do Christmas. We save the money, spend it on ourselves for once, not a dime on food we won't eat or clothes we won't wear or gifts no one needs. Not one red cent. It's a boycott, Nora, a complete boycott of Christmas."
"Sounds awful."
"No, it's wonderful. And it's just for 1 year. Let's take a break. Blair's not here, she'll be back next year, and we can jump back into the Christmas chaos if that's what you want." "Come on, Nora, please. We skip Christmas, save the money, and go splash in the Caribbean for 10 days.
"How much will it cost?"
$3,000.
"So we save money?"
"Absolutely."
"When do we leave?"
"High noon, Christmas Day." They stared at each other for a long time. The deal was closed in bed, with the television on but muted, with magazines scattered over the sheets all unread, with the brochures not far away on the night table. Luther was scanning a financial newspaper but seeing little. Nora had a paperback, but the pages weren't turning. The deal breaker had been their charitable giving. She simply refused to forego it or skip it, as Luther insisted on saying. She had reluctantly agreed to buy no gifts.
She also wept at the thought of no tree, though Luther had mercilessly driven home the point that they yelled at each other every Christmas when they decorated the damn thing. And no frosty on the roof, when every house on the street would have one, which brought up the issue of public ridicule. Wouldn't they be scorned for ignoring Christmas? So what, Luther had replied over and over. Their friends and neighbors might disapprove at first, but secretly they would burn with envy. 10 days in the Caribbean, Nora, he kept telling her. Their friends and neighbors won't be laughing when they're shoveling snow, will they? No jeers from the spectators when we're roasting in the sun and they're bloated on turkey and dressing. No smirks when we return thin and tanned and completely unafraid of going to the mailbox. Nora had seldom seen him so determined. He methodically killed all her arguments, one by one, until nothing was left but their charitable giving. "You're going to let a lousy $600 stand between us and a Caribbean cruise?" Luther asked with great sarcasm. "No, you are," she replied coolly. And with that, they went to their corners and tried to read. But after a tense, silent hour, Luther kicked off the sheets and yanked off the wool socks and said, "All right, let's match last year's charitable gifts, but not a penny more." She flung her paper back and went for his neck. They embraced, kissed. Then she reached for the brochures. 3. Though it was Luther's scheme, Nora was the first to be tested. The call came on Tuesday morning from a pricklish man she didn't much care for. His name was Aubie, and he owned the Pumpkin Seed, a pompous little stationery store with a silly name and absurd prices. After the obligatory greeting, Aubie came right to the point. "Just a bit worried about your Christmas cards, Mrs. Crank," he said, trying to seem deeply concerned. "Why are you worried?" Nora asked. She did not like being hounded by a crabby shopkeeper who would barely speak to her the rest of the year. "Oh, well, you always select the most beautiful cards, Mrs. Crank, and we need to order them now." He was bad at flattery. Every customer got the same line. According to Luther's audit, the Pumpkin Seed had collected $318 from the Cranks last Christmas for cards, and at the moment it did seem somewhat extravagant. Not a major expense, but what did they get from it? Luther flatly refused to help with the addressing and stamping, and he flew hot every time she asked if so-and-so should be added to or deleted from their list. He also refused to offer so much as a glance at any of the cards they received, and Nora had to admit to herself that there was a diminishing joy in getting them. So she stood straight and said, "We're not ordering cards this year." She could almost hear Luther applauding.
"Do what?"
"You heard me.
May I ask why not?"
"You certainly may not." To which Aubie had no response. He stuttered something, then hung up, and for a moment Nora was filled with pride. She wavered, though, as she thought of the questions that would be raised. Her sister, their minister's wife, friends on the literacy board, her aunt in a retirement village, all would ask at some point what happened to their Christmas cards. Lost in the mail? Ran out of time? No, she would tell them the truth. "No Christmas for us this year. Blair's gone, and we're taking a cruise. And if you missed the cards that much, then I'll send you 2 next year." Rallying with a fresh cup of coffee, Nora asked herself how many of those on her list would even notice. She received a few dozen each year, a dwindling number, she admitted, and she kept no log of who bothered and who didn't. In the turmoil of Christmas, who really had time to fret over a card that didn't come? Which brought up another of Luther's favorite holiday gripes, the emergency stash. Nora kept an extra supply so she could respond immediately to an unexpected card. Every year they received 2 or 3 from total strangers and a few from folks who hadn't sent them before, and within 24 hours she'd dash off the Crank's holiday greetings in response, always with her standard handwritten note of good cheer and peace be with you. Of course it was foolish. She decided that she wouldn't miss the entire ritual of Christmas cards. She wouldn't miss the tedium of writing all those little messages and hand-addressing 100 or so envelopes and stamping them and mailing them and worrying about who she forgot. She wouldn't miss the bulk they added to the Daily Mail and the hastily opened envelopes and the standard greetings from people as hurried as herself. Freed of Christmas cards, Nora called Luther for a little propping. He was at his desk. She replayed the encounter with Aubie. "That little worm," Luther mumbled. "Congratulations," he said when she finished. "It wasn't hard at all," she gushed.
Just think of all those beaches, dear, just waiting down there. What have you eaten? She asked.
Nothing. I'm still at 300 calories.
Me too.
When she hung up, Luther returned to the task at hand. He wasn't crunching numbers or grappling with IRS regs as usual, but instead he was drafting a letter to his colleagues. His first Christmas letter. In it, he was carefully and artfully explaining to the office why he would not be participating in the holiday rituals, and, in turn, he would appreciate it if everyone else just left him alone. He would buy no gifts and would accept none. Thank you anyway. He would not attend the firm's black tie Christmas dinner, nor would he be there for the drunken mess they called the office party. He didn't want the cognac and the ham that certain clients gave to all the big shots each year. He wasn't angry, and he would not yell humbug at anyone who offered him a Merry Christmas. He was simply skipping Christmas and taking a cruise instead. He spent most of the quiet morning on his letter and